This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 96. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show, and we focus on everything to do with fantasy books, even a little bit of sci-fi, too, just to throw some things in there. So whether you're looking for grimdark or epic fantasy, space opera, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, just basically anything you can think of in the fantasy book world, you can look forward to finding it here on the show. Let's kick off this week's episode. I'll go ahead and give you my own personal author update. I plan on wrapping up the first draft of Book 4 in the Huntress Clan Saga series at the end of this week. I can't wait to share it with you. There's a lot of great twists and turns coming up. If you haven't picked up the first three books in that series, you might want to check it out over at Amazon, starting with Book 1, Huntress Initiate. And of course, I've got bunches of other books that you can check out. So if you want to find out more about what I'm up to, books that are currently being run as promotions, because I do a couple different promotions every month where you can get books and inexpensively and even free sometimes, you can head over to my fan group on Facebook. That's Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. We don't just talk about my books over there. We talk about a lot of different fantasy books and movies and TV shows. So head on over and check that out. You can also check out my blog and website where all my books are listed at jamiedavisbooks.com. Moving on to the main attraction for this episode, I am super excited to bring you the best-selling fantasy author, Lindsay Baroker. Lindsay has written over 50 science fiction and fantasy novels. I think it's actually closer to 100 now. She won't say that, but she's just got so many great books out there, it's hard to keep track. In addition to all of that, she also enjoys hiking and exploring the outdoors with her dogs, and recently moved in the recent year to Bend, Oregon. She's been a full-time author since 2012 and says it's the best job out there. Check out my interview with Lindsay where we talk about her brand new urban fantasy series, Sinister Magic. Tons of fun. I really have enjoyed the book, and I think you will too. The second book is just about to come out as this episode is released, so it's a great time to start this brand new fantasy series. Here's my interview with Lindsay. Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's really great to have you on the show.
Hey, Jamie. Thanks for having me on.
It is one of those things that it's like I got to get Lindsay on the show, and it falls off the list, and then I'm like, oh, I got to get Lindsay on the show. So I'm so glad, and I was excited to see when your new urban fantasy book was coming out, and I thought this is perfect. So
yes, I actually have something to talk about rather than when you're in the writing cave working on the next thing for a few months.
Right. Yeah. And so why don't you start off by introducing yourself to the readers out there in the audience? A lot of people probably know who you are, but there are always those that don't. So here's your chance to say, who's Lindsay?
I think there's a lot of people who don't know who I am, especially when you get out of the indie author community. I was pretty stoked the other day. I saw someone doing an advertisement on Amazon, and they're like, if you like books like Lindsay Baroker, can't even say my name, and Sarah J. Maas, you'll like my book. I was like, man, I've made it. I'm in the same ad with Sarah J. Maas. That's awesome. but I write science fiction and fantasy, and I have written over 50 novels. I haven't counted for quite a while. And I'm doing the last two in a sci-fi series called Star Kingdom. And I'm also got a new urban fantasy just launched last Friday as we're recording this. And that's going to be my main project here for 2020. I'm pretty prolific and write something. I have something out almost every month. So if you've seen me, that's probably why. Just there's always stuff coming out.
No, and it's exciting. I strive to put out books as quickly as you do, or get close at least. And a lot of people know I write urban fantasy. So I actually started reading Sinister Magic, and it is a lot of fun. It hits all the buttons for me.
Well, thank you for checking it out. I was actually really nervous because urban fantasy wasn't really a genre when I was kind of doing all my formulative reading in the 80s and 90s. I read a lot of epic fantasy, David Eddings, Terry Brooks. Books, all those guys. And, you know, I've read like Alana Andrews and Patricia Briggs and a few of the kind of big name traditional authors, but I haven't kept up with like the indies. I kind of look like, wow, there's that's that trope that's selling this month, you know, and that's that over there. And I'm like, I'm not really that interested in any of those. So I was just hoping I'll throw some dragons in there, which have worked well for me in epic fantasy, and hope for the best.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, dragons has kind of become your thing. One of my favorite things is when people share pictures of various dragon art or dragon paraphernalia, or I don't even know what you call it. You know, when somebody makes a fire pit that looks like a dragon on fire, that's pretty cool. And they share it to your Facebook page and, you know, tag you in it. It's very cool.
I have become the person that people share their dragon finds with. There's like a bench, you know, it's really cool, but I've seen it like 23 times now because everybody's like, did you see this bench? Did you see this bench? I'm like, yes, I did. Thank you.
I know exactly which bench you're talking about.
See, you've seen it 23 bench. Times. It is a great bench.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, it's funny. There aren't a lot of dragons in urban fantasy. There are some. And it's funny because I actually have worked a dragon into my latest series, Dragon Egg. It's not a dragon yet, but, you know, hint, hint. If you have a dragon egg, guess what's coming next? Your dragon is a lot of fun. And I can't say his whole name, so I'm just going to call him Zav because the main character can't say his whole name either.
No, my poor narrator. She's so awesome. She's like such a trooper. She gives me a hard time, but she does her best. And you dragons, you know, it's a fantasy thing. They always have to have long, pretentious, unpronounceable names.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your main character, Val, is a half-elf assassin or a contract killer, but for bad people. So it's, you know, she kills bad guys. So that's a good thing. Did you just pick her out as the main character from the beginning, or were you having an idea of something and, you know, of the setting and then move into the character second? What's your process like?
I actually did have the character first, and that was what prompted me to go into urban fantasy because I've traditionally done more steampunk / high fantasy, maybe you might call it epic fantasy, you know, whatever, wherever the lines are. And I was a little intimidated by urban fantasy because it is very popular. There's a lot of authors writing it. There's a lot of people that read it too. So you can potentially do well. But it wasn't really my space, so I wasn't planning to go into it. But I had the idea for the character after rewatching Gross Point Blank, which is, you know, back from the 90s, Martin, I think Blank is his last name, you know, right? He's a hitman, right. But he has all these issues he's working through, and he has his therapist and that doesn't want to work with him, you know, and it was just so hilarious. I was like, that would be great. I should do one of my characters like that, who's working through a few issues, and the whole calling the therapist thing wouldn't really fit too well into more of a steam age setting. You can't just check your phone. So I was like, well, let's just try this urban fantasy thing, and I'll put it in Seattle and, you know, kind of Oregon where I am now, and I grew up in the Seattle area, so it's kind of fun to... It's more fun than I thought it would be, actually. I've always been like more interested in a galaxy far, far away than stuff set on Earth, but I've been having a good time with it.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, and the best part of it, honestly, is the little pop culture things you're throwing in there, you know. And I love, actually, I didn't pick up on the Gross Point Blank thing, but now I totally see it. It's perfect. But she's got a magical machine pistol named Fessick. Which is a right. Great reference. You know, it's just a lot of fun. I think I'm about halfway through the first book and can't wait for the second book already, I think. But it is hitting all the buttons for me. And I write a lot of urban fantasy and read a lot of urban fantasy. So I think it's going to be a huge hit because it's just got all the little bits of, like, you know, a little bit of humor and the intrigue and the mystery of something going on behind the scenes, that hidden world that most people don't know exists or don't admit exists in this case, is pretty, pretty interesting.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I lucked into it. Or I was very conscious. I was like, I got to start out with like a bang, you know, so just he meets the dragon right away. Cause I know as, this isn't a romance. It's kind of, you know, over many books, it may go that way. But I know as a romance reader, I get cranky when I don't meet the like interesting guy hero in the sample pages. So I was like, okay, the dragon's going to be the interesting guy, and he turns into a human, just in case people are wondering. There's no bestiality going on in these stories. But so I wanted to introduce him right off the bat. And it's funny, the pop culture is very 80s, because that was kind of, you know, when I was growing up. And I have had some readers thank me for doing a heroine this in her 40s, because I know there's a lot of new adult and kind of coming of age urban fantasy out there, which is great. But there's a whole other demographic of readers who probably can connect with the, you know, we meet her kid later in the series, but she's a mom and divorced. And so I think a lot of women out there can identify with that, and just dealing with not understanding kind of the hip slang from the younger generation. So, and I couldn't do a 20 something character even if I wanted to, because I don't have kids. You have to have like teenagers of your own to be dialed into that culture, or yeah, still be young enough.
I was lucky enough to be a stay-at-home dad to two teenage daughters and a teenage son through their formative years, and I do teenage like angst really well, because I had to deal with it a lot. And so, but you know, it's interesting. I'm curious, did you talk to other urban fantasy authors about setting a character in that age group? Because yeah, and I guess I'd call it regular adult, not new adult, not young adult, regular adult. Because that's actually something that's relatively new on the scene and very well received. K.F. Breen just released a book with an author in that age group. I know C.N. Crawford's look, you know, there's a bunch of authors that are starting to look at, you know, writing more age appropriate, or I don't know how to say it properly and be PC, but
yeah.
Actually like it, because there's so much more complexity to somebody that's lived a longer life and has more, you know, scars of various kinds in their background.
I didn't talk to those guys. I know who you're talking about, because there's a whole group of like 13 authors that just launched paranormal women's fiction.
I think
they're tagging it. And I watched them all launch like 2 weeks before mine. I was like, oh man, I guess I better target these guys on Amazon ads. But that's cool that they must have had a meeting last year or something and decided too that it's like, well, maybe this audience is a little underserved. And it's weird, because when you think about it, as far as demographics and economics, that's like the audience that has the money to spend. You know, people in their 40s are kind of usually at their height of earnings potential. They're, you know, often have a house and settle down and a higher paying job. So they're the people that can drop the $5 every week for a new book if they want to. But yeah, I think that probably they will also read about younger characters too. So that's why everybody assumes just go safe, do the younger characters. Yeah, I remember when it was like the Wonder Years came on TV, and it was so weird to me. I was like the age of the characters, but how many adults were watching like this, what is it, middle school or high school they were in there? So I guess we all have that common, even if we're older now, we can remember those times. But I do think that readers probably, there's lots of folks that enjoy having older characters, and you know, there's no limit. I have a 70-year-old pilot in my sci-fi series, so and she gets groovy. Nobody says groovy anymore. That's not even from my generation. I don't know where that came from, but Jiggy, she's not your typical grandma.
You can say whatever you want, right? I mean, maybe we'll start it up again. Start groovy, make groovy cool again.
That wasn't even cool when I was a kid, so I don't know. It's just a word that popped in my head. It's so much easier to be articulate when you're writing and you can go back and edit it.
I know exactly what you mean. But it's just interesting to see that. And you know, you're absolutely right, because the sweet spot for a lot of my readers is like 25 to 45. And so, yeah, you're right. I should be writing, or maybe not should be, but maybe I need to look at writing in more characters that are older. And I do have like side characters that are mentor relationships with my main character, but it's definitely something, you know, reading your book, I was very conscious of it, considering that I'd been following what these other authors were doing with supernatural women's or paranormal women's fiction. And I just wondered if you'd actually talk to them about it, because it was like perfect timing. I think you actually have hit a curve, because I think they're going to start something that's, they're all very popular authors, and they're going to start something that's going to, I think, continue on, because the audience is going to be hungry for it. I really think it was a genius move. And on your part,
accidentally
too,
I mean, genius. Just, oh, they were geniuses. I'm just on their coattails accidentally.
Nothing wrong with, I mean, well, it's hard to follow the trends, isn't it? I mean, and if you don't want to almost follow trends as an author, because you want to write things you're passionate about writing.
Right. And I don't even try to, I was just trying to get close enough to, you know, like, I feel like I'm a little more like Ilana Andrews and those guys than sort of the indie authors that are doing real well right now. So I was hoping, because she's real popular, or her and her husband co-writing. So I was hoping I was close enough. But I think the people that can follow the tropes or the trends or whatever's popular, a lot of them just are really voracious readers themselves, and they see it coming and they're like excited about it. And that's great. I'm usually the picky outsider person who's like, eh, I don't get why that's popular. You know, so I don't think it would work well if I tried to, you know, keep up with the trends and write what's trendy, trends and trendy. Yes. So I don't try, but I am definitely more conscious now these days. And my first series was just write the story I want to write. And now I'm a little bit more, well, let's at least try to, you know, do something that's worked well for me in the past, the dragon angle. And, you know, I tried to get covers that were seen really, you know, right for the genre I was going for. So it's hard to marry the muse with the marketing side and have it all work out. And for you to be happy and for you also to sell books, it's always a challenge.
It's a line to walk. It is. And, you know, I think we all kind of struggle with it to a certain extent. One of the things that I've loved most about watching your career and the books you've written is that you do tend to branch out and try different things, which I think is exciting. And I think your readers seem to be pretty loyal for the most part. Your core readers follow you to like your sci-fi romance and stuff that you've written in that. And I know that's under a pen name, correct?
It is. And I haven't really published anything for a couple of years. So she's on a bit of a hiatus, Ruby Lyons Drake. But I've been really pleased too. I mean, I feel like my stuff's kind of similar. You're going to get the same thing, whatever genre I write in, as far as kind of the characters and the banter and fun adventures, hopefully fun adventures. But I am always happy when, like, I've got some Patreon subscribers. I started that mostly to get around exclusivity with Amazon. I publish the books first on Patreon, then I take them down there, and then I put them in Kindle Unlimited. But I started as an opportunity for readers who aren't on the Amazon platform to still get my books and not have to wait 2 years until I take them out to KU. But I'm impressed with how many of them are just like, yeah, we're just here for everything. Not, you know, like they didn't unsign up after I switched to sci-fi for, you know, a series last year, and they seem to still be on board for urban fantasy this year. So it is definitely a nice feeling as an author to know that you can try some stuff and at least some of the people will come. You know, there's certainly some that only read sci-fi or only read fantasy, and that's to be expected. I'm like that as a reader too. I don't really want to read a thriller, you know, or maybe only a mystery under certain circumstances. If there's appropriate number of dogs or cats helping solve the crime, I might be game.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the Patreon, because that's something that I've been toying with as an author to kind of dive in. And it's just, you know, there's so many things on the list of an indie author to do at any given time. And it's been something that I've been toying with, and I've actually been following your Patreon. I subscribe to your Patreon too. And I've watched what you do and seen the stuff you release there. It's kind of nice to see how you've made that work for you. And it's something that I've considered as well. Do you get a lot of feedback from people via your Patreon account and you know, the stuff you release there?
So I mostly just release the books early. And occasionally if I do a short story or something, I'll give it to them early also. Because you mentioned how much work there already is for us as indie authors, especially if you are writing and publishing pretty quickly. So I didn't want it to be a thing where like I'm doing a short story every month just for them. Because that's a lot of work. I could write another novel in the time that I have to write these four short stories or whatever. So that's the way I went at it. But I totally understand about the work. And like, I've wanted to do a Kickstarter for quite a while to do like a really cool hardback edition, sign it for the readers and all that. But still on the to-do list because it's a lot of work. I get a little feedback. They're generally pretty positive overall. I've had a couple send me typos because they get early copies. So I'm always happy to fix those. Yeah, the more I can get fixed before it goes up to thousands of people, you know, awesome. I'm that's not something I had early on, was people willing to just read and do typos, or I didn't know, I didn't ask. But now I've got a little group of people who do the typo hunting, because there's always stuff that gets by you, gets by the editor, you know, it's just.
Yeah, I have an editor and a proofreader, and I still, you know, they'll find 5 or 6 things at least when a book comes out, and it's how does it all get through? And I find typos in books 5 years later that somebody will send to me that got past everyone. So I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, it's always my older books that, you know, Amazon now sends out those alerts. Like if somebody's like, hey, here's a typo, I was like, oh man, my first series is still getting some of those. I thought I had them all. But so at least now with the typo hunters, in addition to the editor and myself, there's usually still a couple that make it live, but I don't get those alerts all the time from Amazon on the new books.
I think there's typo gremlins, honestly, that just go through and add typos. I just, you know, magical little typo gremlins that toy with authors.
I'm always shocked at some of the stuff I write. Like on Twitter, I, you know, have a DM with some of my friends who are just always going in. I'm like, I was watching myself type that and it still didn't come out correctly. How is that possible? Sometimes you can blame autocorrect, but not always.
Not always. Definitely. Definitely not. So what's the schedule with Sinister Magic? You've got, you know, this book just came out. What's the schedule for the next book? And what are you thinking about? What's the next challenge for Val?
So the next one actually comes out the 14th of March here. So just over a week away as we're recording this. And then the third one is also written and will be coming out probably the 1st of April. I'm still the fan of the rapid release. It seems like there's a lot of tangible and intangible benefits of doing it. And it's also, you know, it's just nice to get a whole bunch of new readers, especially when you genre hop like I do. Mm-hmm. It's like you're counting on trying to hopefully get some new people from that genre. And so I put book one out usually at 99 cents, at least for the beginning. And like this one, I'm spending a lot on advertising it because I know I want to do like 8 or 9 books. And I can break even on book one and that's fine. And then I do the others usually at $4.99. And then so that's where the money is made. So, you know, and then I'll probably be every month or 6 weeks. I'll bank the first three. I'll write them while I'm still, you know, the other older series is still selling. And so I can release the first three pretty quickly. And it seems to always help me anyway, get the momentum going. And really, I feel like readers too are going to remember you and be more locked into a series after they've read the first three. Where some of these voracious folks that are subscribed to Kindle Unlimited, you know, they read a book a day. So if they read yours, they may just forget about it unless you have the next one ready for them to grab. So that's why I'm a fan of doing it that way. And what's next for Val? She has so many problems. There's another dragon in book two.
Oh, cool.
Not a friendly dragon. I mean, not that Zav is super friendly, but he didn't kill her, so that's
dragons are so badass. I mean, like she doesn't even cause a dent when she runs into Zav. I mean, he could like, you know, wipe the floor with her and walk away without even a second thought.
Well, that's how dragons should be. Yes. And, you know, she's also a character that because I made her half elf, you know, she gets a little more longevity. Like she's in her 40s, but she still looks pretty good. You've seen the cover of the book anyway. Mm-hmm. Not that you can actually find a model that's not in their 20s, you know, when you're looking. So she's actually a pretty strong character. She's lived long enough to get these magical weapons and she has all these magical charms. So she's pretty tough girl. But so I had to give her, you know, these opponents that are just like, yeah, I'm screwed if I have to fight one of them. And as the series progresses, she will eventually learn that she does have a little magic from her half, you know, her elven ancestry. She's never going to become like a super, you know, godlike character or anything like that because she's already gotten enough toys and things. But that'll be a little bit of her quest along the way, is to meet her elven father and, you know, get off of Earth. There's portals that go to other realms. Cool. That we'll get to see a little bit of eventually. But I am trying to keep it. Most of the stories are sort of in Seattle or Oregon. She goes to Idaho in book three. She goes places I've been, like on vacations and stuff, and it's fun to mess with them. They're like, well, I'm sorry. Hopefully the tourism board for that town will not mind that there's some Sasquatches in book three that are making trouble in Idaho. So you got to use a little bit of the local lore as
absolutely.
Well, you know? Yeah, I love my elves and dwarves and stuff, but I'm going to get some of the local stuff too.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, like most of my stuff takes place around Baltimore, Philly, maybe to the north or DC to the south, but you know, everything's around the Maryland area. So I completely get it. You write what you're familiar with, and there's a lots of local legends and local lore that you can bring into it that are, you know, interesting to readers, but really interesting to local readers. It'll be fun for them to, you know, see that represented, I think. So that's a lot of fun. What about reaching out to people? And we talked a little bit briefly as we wrap up here about your Facebook earlier. You really have a strong Facebook presence. I think that seems to be where you like to kind of catch up with folks.
It's where they were. So I actually, when I started my author career, I was not on Facebook, even as a normal person, you know, exchanging vacation pics with friends. And I wasn't really that into it, but I was like, well, I got to make an author page. That was 2011. So it's like, that was what you have to do. And I remember when I made it, at least one person came by and was like, oh, great, you're finally here. This is, you know, because it's the place so many people hang out. And even, you know, if I seem to skew towards, you know, what are we, Gen X and then baby boomers, it's sort of, that was another reason not to necessarily do a younger character, because I haven't had as much luck with that. I seem to draw readers that are out of the 30s and 40s and want some older characters. But they're all there, so I hang out there. And as I've become, I don't know, I'm just willing to go with the dragon thing. You know, it's kind of fun. There's some silly stuff out there. I've had, the last thing that went viral was there's a sculptor who does cool dragon stuff. And he does this thing, like they're vents, like heat register kind of vents with dragons like peering out from inside dragging down the, you know, opening it. I was like, this is really cool. So I shared that and it went viral, at least by my standards. I think it had like 60,000 reach and I don't know how many comments, hundreds of comments and reactions. And I can't say that helps sell books, but at least it's fun. And it gives my readers something to share and talk about and kind of keeps me in their feed. I think because if people don't interact with your, you know, whether you do group or a page, if they're not interacting every now and then, I think Facebook just kind of drops drops you off and then you have to pay to advertise to them and hopefully get them back.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's and that's one of the things I always see your stuff pop up. So it's definitely working, I think, at least in my feed. So that's great. So lindseybaroker.com is your website. You can also be found in the same way on search on Facebook. Lindsey, it has been fantastic having you on the show. And I know you've got somewhere to get to, so I want to respect your time. I'm looking forward to reading the next book in the series. I urge people to go out and check out Sinister Magic. By the time this episode comes out, book two will probably either almost be out or already out. So you've got two books to go and jump into right away. Lindsey, thanks for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me and thanks for listening, everyone.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, folks. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community over at Facebook and also over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also, while you're over at fantasy-focus.com on the website, each podcast episode post has links right there at the top of the page below the audio player where you can subscribe using your favorite mobile app for iOS or Android or even subscribe by email. So you don't want to miss any of the episodes. That's a great way to make sure you catch up with everything. We've got some great authors coming up. You won't want to miss any of them. Our next episode is a great friend of mine, Matt Larkin. I know you're going to love it. I love chatting with Matt. That's it for this episode, though. So I hope you'll come back and catch the next episode of Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books or my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. And if you want a free book, you can actually sign up for my newsletter over there and I'll be happy to share one with you. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for the next podcast. And in the meantime, I'll remind you to, keep your eyes open, folks, because whether you know it or not, there's magic all around you.